The Duel by Eugene Field, 1850 to 1895. The gingham dog and the calico cat side by side on the table sat. 'Twas 12:30, and what do you think? Nor one nor t'other had slept a wink. The old Dutch clock and the Chinese plate appeared to know as sure as fate there was going to be a terrible spat. I wasn't there, I simply state what was told to me by the Chinese plate. The gingham dog went bow wow wow, and the calico cat replied meow. The air was littered an hour or so with bits of gingham and calico, while the old Dutch clock in the chimney place, up with its hands before its face, for it always dreaded a family row. Now mind, I'm only telling you what the old Dutch clock declares is true. The Chinese plate looked very blue and wailed, "Oh dear, what shall we do?" But the gingham dog and the calico cat wallowed this way and tumbled that, employing every tooth and claw in the awfulest way you ever saw. And oh, how the gingham and calico flew! Don't fancy I exaggerate. I got my news from the Chinese plate. Next morning, where the two had sat, they found no trace of dog or cat. And some folks think unto this day that burglars stole that pair away. But the truth about the cat and pup is this: they ate each other up. Now what do you really think of that? The old Dutch clock, it told me so, and that is how I came to know. Welcome back to the Whispering Gallery with me, Suzanne Nicolaisen, your apparition of the arts, teller of the sometimes paranormal and always mysterious spooky art stories, along with our dog friends Shotzi, a short-haired red miniature dachshund, and her buddy Boomer, a cream 5% honorary doxy mix. Since our last episode, we've had a couple of temporary four-paw visitors, including Copper, a long-haired dapple, red and white, and Bonsai, who's now called Bonnie, short hair, brown dapple, and a spicy attitude. She was pretty growly at Shotzi. Both of these dogs were dealing with IVDD, and both have had MRIs and surgery, and well, if you want to hear their stories, check out the last special episode, an entire episode to three of the dogs dealing with IVDD at Rocky Mountain Dachs and Rescue. It's not art-related, but it is important to me, so I wanted to share it with you. I was still knee-deep in researching the tribes of Western Europe and what, not who, a mother goose was. If you'd like more special editions about the dogs at Rocky Mountain Dachs and Rescue, please let me know at whisperingcontact@gmail.com, or DM me on the Facebook page, or even the contact form at whisperinggallerypodcast.com. If you want more special coloring pages for the episodes, please let me know. There's one on Patreon for free for the Night Watch episodes. I would love to hear about spooky art stories that you know about or would like me to research and share. And share your favorite episode with a friend. Let's head into the Whispering Gallery. The long shadows of evening will follow us in. Part 1. The Wolf Enters the Tale. I started this episode's cold open with The Duel by Eugene Field because it so perfectly wraps up this episode in one reading. I recommend checking out the reading by an ESL English teacher. The link is on Patreon. Self-aware inanimate objects retell the terrible story of the stuffed animals and the result of an out-of-control family fight. Something one might hear on an 80s tabloid talk show. A little gossipy, nonsensical, silly, and horrific. They ate each other up. Full disclosure, this poem is not part of the Mother Goose collection of stories or rhymes, and was written by an American humorist in the late 1800s. Mother Goose, as recognizable to many of us raised with a Mother Goose book, goes back to Western Europe. Before the stories were written down, they belonged to the people, carried and shared by voice. Mother Goose is not a particular person, although some have tried to claim there was one, but a Mother Goose was a collection of beloved stories. Tonight, our story takes us into a place of disquiet through dark coniferous forests with copses of fir and spruce trees. Strangely, at times, these dark forests seem to biolocate between Germany and France. In Mother Goose stories and the fairy tales of the Brothers Grimm, geographically, the countries are next-door neighbors. Thankfully, the world that these stories reside in is an imaginary place where some shockingly mean-spirited humans make life harder for others. Curses, vile cannibals, and horrific serial killers, even talking wolves, are key players as the villains. But also, a magic midnight time spell, a cursed prince, impractical glass heels, treasure, griddle cakes for grandmother, alchemy, spinning straw into gold, grouchy dwarfs, good fairies, angels. The world of fairy tales is a safe space for us to observe the dire consequences of bad judgment and the magic that could happen to everyday people. In 1696, a Frenchman, Charles Perrault, saying it like you spell it, or saying it in French, Charles Perrault, possibly with the help of his son Pierre. Actually, that's what one resource said. Another said the pen name he used was his youngest son's name. Okay, so speaking with an American accent, Charles took a careful, deliberate stab at gathering the stories that had been just kind of adrift. I think most of us are familiar with the fairy tale worlds unfurled with the help of illustrators, and as readers simply turning the page. The stories had to be gathered and written down first, edited, illustrators showing the stories that crossed country lines and generations, passing by word of mouth from the migrating, i.e. attacking, conquering, intermarrying, trading, settling, etc., of tribes and the people in Western Europe. For example, Saxons, Goths, Franks, and Celts among them. Okay, so what's with Mother Goose not being a person? I mean, Mother Hubbard, Mother Ginger in the Nutcracker Ballet. It's her title, right? A noun is a person, place, or thing. In this case, it's the title of a group of stories. So it's a thing rather than a person. Hang in there. More details explaining this point of view to come. Mother Goose tales came from France, originally gathered. They came from Western Europe. So here's the name of the book that they were first collected in. Please forgive any mispronunciation. I took German in high school, not French, and either way, I am not fluent. Histoire ou contu tom passé avec des mardi, contu ma mère loi. Okay, so in English, that is stories or tales from past times with morals, Mother Goose Tales. Britannica shares Tales of Mother Goose, a French folk expression, roughly equivalent to old wives' tales. The Morgan Library and Museum reads, each of the tales undoubtedly had its origins in folklore and was passed down in oral tradition. Conte de ma mère loi seems to have been a traditional term for such stories in France. So, who were the people telling these folk tales? For the stories that would be gathered under the name of Mother Goose, we're talking about people who settled in Western and Central Europe, Saxon and Celtic people in the areas we now know as France, Germany, and England. The Franks, the Alemanni, the Thuringians, the Frisians, the Angles, Saxons, and Jutes. Ha, I'm not a scholar, please excuse my mispronunciations. In Britain, Celtic tribes, the Iceni, again, I-C-E-N-I, Brigantes, Dumnoi, Catuvelani, were there long before the Vikings and Normans decided to cast a shadow there. So, what do you think? Is it surprising that a dark forest in Gaul, now France, also showed up as a dark forest in Germany, or Germania, the Roman name for the area, right next door? That dark forest may now be what we call the Black Forest. Without something like a wormhole kicking in, how could the forest be in two places? The stories seem to have found their way through the woods. I'm guessing they left a breadcrumb trail. The worlds of these Western European tribes would have seemingly overlapped as the people intermarried, migrated. Do you happen to remember the jump to conclusions, Matt, from Saturday Night Live? I don't want to jump to any conclusions here, but it would seem plausible. They would hear each other's stories, and these would become their own stories, like campfire stories, maybe. It's a literary maze, just trying to figure this out. When Stories from Past Times with Morals was published in 1697, the tales Charles Perrault had gathered were already old, shaped by life experience and illustrated by Gustave Doré, who was French, born in 1832. He was a printmaker, illustrator, sculptor, who was known for his illustration of classic literature using wood engravings. Quoting from Britannica on his biography page, his prolific output also touched on symbolism, Orientalism, and detailed Victorian realism wood-engraved book illustrations. Employing more than 40 woodcutters, he produced more than 90 illustrated books. Unquote. I'm going to read a story to you from Charles Perrault's collection of Mother Goose Tales, a story you're probably familiar with, Little Red Riding Hood. And this tale is not meant for children, but it was to be read at salons amongst adults with a moral lesson. With that caveat, here we go. I'm just pulling it up on my Kindle. I am currently on the morals area, so let me get back to the tale. Okay, Little Red Riding Hood. Once upon a time, there lived in a certain village a little country girl, the prettiest creature was ever seen. Her mother was excessively fond of her, and her grandmother doted on her much more. This good woman got made for her a little red riding hood, which became the girl so extremely well that everybody called her Little Red Riding Hood. One day her mother, having made some griddle cakes, said to her, "Go, my dear, and see how thy grandmama does, for I hear she has been very ill. Carry her a griddle cake and this little pot of butter." Little Red Riding Hood set out immediately to go to her grandmother, who lived in another village. As she was going through the wood, she met with Gaffer Wolf, who had a very great mind to eat her up, but he durst not, because of some faggot makers hard by in the forest. He asked her whither she was going. The poor child, who did not know that it was dangerous to hear a wolf talk, said to him, "I'm going to see my grandmama and carry her a griddle cake and a little pot of butter from my mama." "Does she live far off?" said the wolf. "Oh, aye," answered Little Red Riding Hood. "It is beyond that mill you see there, at the first house in the village." "Well," said the wolf, "and I'll go and see her too. I'll go this way and you go that, and we shall see who will be there soonest." The wolf began to run as fast as he could, taking the nearest way. And the little girl went by the farthest, about diverting herself in gathering nuts, running after butterflies and making nosegays of such little flowers as she met with. The wolf was not long before he got to the old woman's house. He knocked at the door, tap, tap. "Who's there?" "Your grandchild, Little Red Riding Hood," replied the wolf, counterfeiting her voice, "who has brought you..." They're spelling it girdle cake. I've tried to Google it, and the nearest I could find was like the Welsh griddle cakes. So I know this is French, but I'm not sure of the translation what a girdle cake is. So I've been pronouncing it griddle cake, which is kind of like a little cookie that you fry in a pan. So he was saying, your grandchild, Little Red Riding Hood," replied the wolf, counterfeiting her voice, "who has brought you a griddle cake and a little pot of butter sent to you by Mama." The good grandmother, who was in bed because she found herself somewhat ill, cried out, "Pull the peg, and the bolt will fall." The wolf pulled the peg, and the door opened, and then presently he fell upon the good woman and ate her up in a moment, for it was above 3 days that he had not touched a bit. He then shut the door and went into the grandmother's bed, expecting Little Red Riding Hood, who came some time afterwards and knocked at the door. Tap, tap. "Who's there?" Little Red Riding Hood, hearing the big voice of the wolf, was at first afraid, but believing her grandmother had got a cold and was hoarse, answered, "'Tis your grandchild, Little Red Riding Hood, who has brought you a griddle cake and a little pot of butter Mama sends you." The wolf cried out to her, softening his voice as much as he could, "Pull the peg and the bolt will fall." Little Red Riding Hood pulled the peg and the door opened. The wolf, seeing her come in, said to her, hiding himself under the bedclothes, "Put the cake and the little pot of butter upon the bread bin and come and lie down with me." Little Red Riding Hood undressed herself and went into bed, where, being greatly amazed to see how her grandmother looked in her night clothes. Okay, what? She did what? Is this like a Mandela effect? I don't remember this part of the story. She said to her, "Grandmama, what great arms you have." "That is the better to hug thee, my dear." "Grandmama, what great legs you have got." "That is to run the better, my child." "Grandmama, what great ears you have got." "That is to hear the better, my child." "Grandmama, what great eyes you have got." "It is to see the better, my child." "Grandmama, what great teeth you have got. That is to eat thee up." And saying these words, this wicked wolf fell upon poor Little Red Riding Hood and ate her all up. The moral. From this short story, easy we discern what conduct all young people ought to learn. But above all young, growing Mrs. Fair, whose orient rosy blooms begin to appear. Trying to draw that out so I can try and make it rhyme. It's kind of a stretch, but I know it's a translation. Who beauties in the fragrant spring of age, with pretty airs young, hearts are apt to engage. Ill do they listen to all sorts of tongues, since some enchant and lure like siren songs. No wonder, therefore, 'tis if overpowered, so many of them has the wolf devoured. The wolf, I say, for wolves too sure there are, of every sort and every character. Some of them mild and gentle humored be, of noise and gall and rancor wholly free, who tame familiar full of compliance, ogle and leer, languish, cajole and glance, with luring tongues and language wondrous sweet, follow young ladies as they walk the street, even to their very houses, nay bedside, and artful though their true designs they hide. Yet ah, these simpering wolves, who does not see, most dangerous of wolves indeed they be. This is from the Fairy Tales of Charles Perrault that I was able to download off of Project Gutenberg. So if you want to get the fairy tales as well, you can just give it a Google and download it and send it to your Kindle. In France, wolf attacks were a very real danger and showed up in the stories of Little Thumb and Little Red Riding Hood, aka in the Brothers Grimm, Little Red Cap. The gray wolf, Canis lupus, is the primary wolf in France, and is a descendant of the Italian wolf subspecies. The Italian wolf is called Lupus italicus. Wolves in France were nearly eradicated by hunters by the 1930s. The wolves began to return to France from Italy around 1990. They are currently in a protected status in France, and coexisting can be a challenge, with 300 to 500 wolves living in France, as per the White Marmot website. From the online article Man and Wolf, 2,000 Years of History, quote, we attempted to measure the real extent of the wolf threat from the Middle Ages to the 20th century by collecting information on human victims in the territory that is currently France. From 1578 to 1887, there were 328 wolf attacks, with 274 of those wolves being infected with rabies. They continue. Asked to compare the effects of rabies transmission to men from dogs and wolves, Louis Pasteur concluded that the incubation period was much shorter and the mortality much higher for those infected by Canis lupus. The Wolf of 1706 and various documents. An autograph of Pasteur is where that came from. They also say, quote, the attack is frenzied and vicious, with numerous deep and extensive bites impregnating many wounds with its virulent saliva, so that they not only transmit a greater amount of the virus to their victims than dogs, but also inoculate it more deeply and frequently into tissues, where it absorbs and proliferates more easily. That was cited by Corinne Levy, and this was off mrsh.unicaen.fr. And the following is from academia.edu, an article called A Debated Issue in the History of People and Wild Animals. The Wolf Threat in France from the Middle Ages to the 20th Century, 2014, Jean Moricau, Moricau, shares that, quote, 5,379 total wolf attack victims were recorded, differentiating between predatory and rabid incidents, unquote. Less than a century later, that fear of wolves slipped into strange territory between 1764 and 1767, 3 years, when a wolf or something wolf-like terrorized the people of Gévaudan, France. What does wolf-like mean, anyway? Whether an unknown beast, a wolf, or disturbingly, there's a theory it might have been a human, serial killer. The story lingers at the uneasy edges of where history meets legend. So, what happened to the beast? They say a hunter took it down, some say with a silver bullet. I believe the wolf-like comment came from the doctor who was doing the autopsy. Little Red Riding Hood's story with the wolf, you can kind of see where Perrault may have thrown in an add-on to the story that was later referenced in The Moral, in which he warns young women to beware of suitors with ill intentions, comparing the wolf to a man who is giving a woman attention without her best interest at heart. the wolf being used as the bad guy would not have been a stretch in France during that time. It seems France was overloaded with wolves, and wolf attacks were common. So these stories weren't exactly brand new. Perrault gathered tales already floating around and shaped them into elegant little gems, ending each with a rhyming moral, as shown in Little Red Riding Hood. Later, when the Brothers Grimm began collecting stories in Germany, they borrowed and edited some of Perrault's tales, too. From there, the stories kept going, like Hansel and Gretel was adapted to opera, Sleeping Beauty choreographed for ballet, and eventually many ended up as animated films through Walt Disney. And more recently, with Robin McKinley, she has written books like Beauty and Chalice, which is one of my favorite books. And there are other stories in modern fiction like Cinder and the Bear and the Nightingale that play off of these early tales. There is actually a boatload of these kinds of novels. Walk into a brick-and-mortar bookstore and you may pass a handful of the books on fairy tales. They're pretty popular. In talking about fairy tales coming from more than one voice, I think I've only touched the tip of the iceberg. Each time I pull up more research, there is a rich trove of influence to folktale and fairy tale from various researchers. So you could spend a long time trying to sort things out and getting to the bottom of where these tales came from, and still be left swimming in the stories. At 5 minutes of editing left, this story has been all over the place and is a bit like a patchwork quilt, as wrangling the fairy tales together as we know them came to be. And throughout this research, people make claims black and white of how things happened. And I dig into the research and find out that maybe that is not exactly how it happened. You'll probably notice where I've had to cut in a couple of times so that I could update the story. So I totally understand why there are scholars that study folk tales and anthropology and the history of people. So, respect, right? There's a bit more to this story of Midnight Mother Goose. So we will dig into heroines in the next episode. And I'm not just talking about Sleeping Beauty, Little Red Riding Hood, or Snow White and Rose Red. They're characters, not necessarily the heroes or heroines of the story. Until next time, be good to each other. Talk to you soon. Take care. And remember to keep your flashlights close and your spooky art stories closer when visiting the Whispering Gallery.